Hello, welcome to The Musics in Japan,
a conversational podcast about daily life for an American couple living long-term in Japan.
So lately, I've been thinking about what it means to be an immigrant and moving, moving to Japan. And I also want to say I'm in the middle of going through dental reconstructive surgery on my mouth, and I'm in a lupus flare. So if my voice sounds a little bit weird, because it sounds weird to me, it's because my sinuses are being affected and the airflow in my mouth is being affected and the way I can move my mouth is being affected. So sorry if that's distracting to anyone. And after I'm on the other side of the process, we'll talk about it on the podcast. But that's not the topic for today. The topic for today is being an immigrant.
Okay. Well, I'm going to keep being an immigrant, whether or not that's the topic. So it's a good topic.
Yeah. So we talked about before the difference in my views on immigration since becoming an immigrant and before being an immigrant, on things like language learning and how to eke out a living and all of that. And I think that there are privileged immigrants and underprivileged immigrants, and I am absolutely a privileged immigrant because I have a degree and an education, and you have a degree and education, and your degree let us come over here and work. And before your degree, I was able to come over here as a language learner. So everyone knows famously now that my Japanese is busted, but it's busted at the intermediate level. So I have enough to function through everything, and my Japanese is good enough that if I needed to go somewhere and do something, that I could speak Japanese through it and understand what they were saying back to me. Like, I could handle immigration, I could handle the ward office, and I could handle the pension office and all of those types of things. I don't. I let our son do it because his Japanese is much better than mine, and it takes him way less effort.
There's a big difference between can and do.
Yeah. And so what I find interesting are my views on immigration that have stayed with me, mm-hmm. even though I'm an immigrant, and those that I have let go of.
Okay.
So do you have any pre and post? Do you find that your position on immigration is the same?
I find that with most things, I'm not able to remember what my position was before I changed my mind, unless I have external markers of, like, I did this or I voted this way to say, okay, my views must have been different. Mm-hmm. So I could tell you what my views are now, but I am not confident that I could accurately tell you what my views were before. I do know that my whole life, I've known that my grandparents on my mother's side were immigrants.
Yeah.
So I don't think that I've ever been anti-immigration in general. I don't think that I've ever been anti-immigrant in specific, but maybe I was, and I just, now that I've changed my mind, I don't remember that.
I don't remember you ever being anti-immigration, and I've never been anti-immigration. I just had a lot of strong language views in terms of, if you're going to live in a country, you should speak that language. Mm-hmm. And I find that now I'm much more sympathetic to how difficult it is as an adult to learn a second language. And especially for me, what's especially daunting is my ego. My ego gets in the way.
Yeah.
Because I can express myself as a college educated, and I'm an expert in my field in English. And in Japanese, I'm still, like, as a reader, I'm still in elementary school. And as someone who can express themselves, I'm in junior high. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even in high school yet. And that really kills the motivation when I'm like, damn it. Like, I'm reading at an elementary school level and I'm speaking at a junior high school level. That's just really like, well, screw it. And I make money in English and live my life in English. And I can see how that immigrant bubble happened.
Right, right. I think that the immigrant bubble, too, you have people who act as facilitators or as gatekeepers, depending on the community.
Yeah.
Who either facilitate everybody interacting more fully with the bigger society or everything goes through them because they don't like things when they don't go through them. Because they, like, it's not, like, totalitarian. It's just they don't try and help people become self-sufficient. They do things for you and take a piece of that. And there's both kinds of Western immigrants here, of European and American immigrants, who will happily, you know, take your money to do things for you and not help yeah. you engage.
And Japanese nationals.
And Japanese nationals, yes.
They're more than happy to keep you helpless.
Right.
To keep them employed. The thing that I find most shocking is that the biggest international school in our, the second biggest international school in our area, they promise to help and support their seniors stay in Japan. And then as soon as they're no longer a part of the school system, they don't help them at all. There's like no support.
I find the international school thing really interesting because I worked one for a little while. And
international schools cost grip.
They do, but
they cost tons of money. They're so super expensive.
But it also depends on what you mean by what by international school. I think
all of them, even like the little kindergarten schools, like all the private schools in Japan are hella expensive.
Right, but I think that there's a schism in what you what is called international schools. There are things that are targeted at the host country, and I'm putting air quotes around that. Students to become more international, and then there are things that are targeted at foreigners to get schooling inside of the host country, again in air quotes.
Yeah.
And those schools can operate very differently, and usually schools are very firmly one or the other.
Yeah.
They're very firmly here in Japan. We're here to teach English to Japanese kids and make Japanese kids ready for university in an English-speaking country.
Yeah.
And I say English because that's the most popular and most prevalent, but there are French and Russian and Chinese in Nagoya. But in Japan overall, there are French and Russian and Chinese yeah. schools and things. And then there are the schools that are, we're here for everybody who is not Japanese. And they tend to really focus on the number of non-Japanese kids they have. And they set quotas on, we're only going to have 30% of the kids be Japanese. Or stuff like that, so that you get this international flavor. And the kids that I feel have it the hardest are the third culture kids. Like, I had a lot of Korean students who come over here, and their native language is Korean. They need to speak Japanese to if they want to function outside of the bubble, but they have to speak English to function in the bubble.
Yeah.
And then the rules at most of the schools are you can't speak a language other than the language of the school unless everybody around speaks that language.
So I find that for me, in the United States, I was not aware of my privilege. I just wasn't.
Around this issue, you're saying?
On anything. Mm. In the U.S., I was just not. And that's because I have like such a tragic backstory. You don't, like, how can you possibly get from entering the foster system before my first birthday and being a foster kid, dropping out of high school, getting my GED and living on my own, emancipating and living on my own at 16, to I'm privileged. And for me, it's realizing the privilege of being American. And I know a lot of people feel like being American isn't a privilege, but for me, it is. And for me, I see how privileged I truly am because I look at the rights of women around the world globally. And there are women who are dying to get out of their country. Mm-hmm. Like literally women being murdered because they're trying to leave their country. And women who have never, ever been on a plane and will never, ever be on a plane. So I look at like there are levels of privilege. And I feel like being American, there is that comes with a level of privilege for me as a woman of color. And the fact that I haven't gone through a lot of atrocities that women around the world globally experience. So being an immigrant as an American in Japan puts me at the top of the pecking order because when the Prime Minister of Japan speaks about immigrants, he always singles out, well, we're not talking about Americans.
Right.
They're not, he doesn't even say North Americans. He says, we're not talking about Americans because there is a bias against Canadians, which I find interesting because I work with a lot of the foreign community and I find that it's interesting to me because in the United States, we hear how lovely Canada is, how nice Canadians are, and that they're like better than us in every way is the reputation in the United States of Canadians. The reputations of Canadians here in Nagoya specifically is that they're incompetent, self-important, and blowhards, which is so strange to me because in the United States, that's what we're told everyone thinks about us outside of the United States. In America, when I was there, everyone was telling me, don't leave because every other country will hate you. Don't leave because they don't want us. Stay here, be isolationist, be separatist from the rest of the world and put America first. And I think that that propaganda is put out there to keep all of everything America has going for it, right? To keep all of the educated people there. Because as soon as you get a college degree, most countries will take you if you're American.
I think it's interesting, though, because I didn't feel like I got that propaganda. Like, I got that messaging.
So you think this is just like a Bay Area thing? Because I grew up in Silicon Valley. And
I'm not sure it's a Bay Area thing.
I grew up with people who were well-traveled, even though I was in the foster system. Once I left the foster system, the people that I got to know had all traveled abroad. So
I'm not going to say it's a Bay Area thing. I think that it's beyond
me. Silicon Valley, not Bay Area. Bay Area, Silicon Valley.
I'm not sure it's geographic. I'm going to say it's beyond me to say what the source of it is. Okay. But that the message that I got about going abroad was, go abroad and make your fortune.
Like, and then bring it home.
You're one of the masters of the universe. Like, go, go be a titan of industry.
Okay.
Right. Spread American.
The colored woman, white man, different level of privilege. Different
like
message.
I said, I am not. I am not going to attribute that message, but.
Okay. Huh. Interesting. So you were told go be Lord of the Universe.
Correct.
Okay. Were you supposed to marry a foreign woman?
No. No.
Okay.
But I think about, we watched that show many, many years ago, Cracker.
Yeah.
And there was the final season in
when he was
Hong
in
Kong. When he was in Hong Kong.
So we're talking about Cracker, which is a UK series. It's freaking amazing. Dark, dark stuff. But it is so good.
And I don't remember the name of the lead actor.
The guy who played
Hagrid in Harry Potter.
Yeah,
but
we're so sorry. You deserve the respect of us knowing your name.
He's famous. He'll get over it.
And he doesn't even know about us.
No, no,
he
doesn't get over it.
He's not worried about us not knowing his name.
He can
but
call,
he's such a brilliant actor.
Go ahead and call us if you're upset.
Yeah, go ahead and, you know, send us a friend request.
Is that Robbie Coltrane or is that somebody different?
I don't know. Is it Robbie Coltrane? We don't Google on
we
this show.
We don't Google. Okay, so anyway. But
he, I think it is, though.
But he says,
I'm going to go with Robbie Coltrane.
Okay. He says at one point about somebody that they're, or they say about him, I don't remember which one, that they're filth, failed in London, try Hong Kong.
Yeah, he says it.
Okay.
He says it. So the thing about the show is he's an alcoholic and a gambling addict. And he has the best alcoholic rants of any show. The only show that had better rants was that one show about Parliament that I watched.
Yeah, with Peter Capaldi. I don't remember the name of that.
Peter, I don't remember the show, but Peter Capaldi's rants were epic in that show and just filled with cursing, like next leveled cursing.
Like Christopher level.
No, better than me.
Wow.
I haven't mastered an like bleep, but I haven't mastered cunt.
Mm.
And so I'm still like trying to master using cunt because cunt is like a really, really bad word if you're American. You're just never supposed to say it.
Right.
And then I watched a stand-up special, and the guy was like, my grandmother said, cunt, bring me my cunting slippers.
And I think we've talked about this.
Yeah. And so now I'm just like, I'm in love with – and Peter Capaldi, his rants in that show were so epic and involved the word cunt a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love that word. I want to master it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to work – that's one of the things I'm working on. Like, forget learning Japanese. I'm going to master the use of cunt.
Okay. So getting back to what I was saying.
Yeah.
I think that attitude of, like, if you're a businessman and you can't make it in London, go to Hong Kong and you can make it big there. Like,
so you're saying, like, this is white privilege and the message that you as a white man got.
Correct.
In the United States.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's the message that I got and that I'm a white man.
So I wonder if it was a bit discriminatory, like international travel. I don't think this was discriminatory. I don't think it was a black thing. I don't think it was me being a black girl thing. I think it was more, and I don't even think it was patriarchy. I think it was really, I'm going to say it, I'm going to call it. I think it was very much a Silicon Valley thing.
Okay.
And because those were the people that I knew.
See, and I think it was very much a Mormon thing.
So the reason I think it was very much a Silicon Valley thing is because, just full disclosure, it was when I was in the game. And so in the game, my clients were really rich white guys.
Okay.
And so the people I was hanging out with, that I'm like air quotes hanging out with, people that were giving me money for my time,
yes,
were really rich white guys. And they were like, no, they hate us overseas. They think we're this. They think we're that. You're going to have a miserable time if you travel. You should stay here. Mm-hmm. So maybe they had a vested interest in keeping me specifically available to them.
Right.
I don't know. But then famously, Kid and Play wanted me to travel with them. And so, I don't know, like, the musicians I met back in the day wanted me to travel with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the non-musicians wanted me to stay. So I was getting, like, this weird mix of information about what it was like to go abroad. So I felt like if you go abroad famous, then it's going to be awesome. And if you go abroad not being famous, it's going to be miserable.
Oh, that was the message you're getting.
Yeah, that was my message. And so I always, that's why when, by the time you had met me, when I was like, because you met me at the, when I was like wrapping up that part of my life and packing away kind of thing. Then I was very anti going abroad. And I don't think I had ever told you that. I don't think I had ever told you why.
You hadn't.
Yeah, because I think, like, this is newsflash, like breaking news for you, that I believe that people hate Americans.
This is breaking news, because when we met, I was very clear that I wanted to go overseas for graduate school, that I didn't want to do grad school in the U.S.
Yeah, and I was like, no, never. I'm never leaving America.
Yeah.
Because I had been taught that, erroneously, that everybody hates Americans. And so then this is privilege. I was able to go and be in foreign countries before deciding to leave. Mm-hmm. And we started small. We went to Canada, and then we went to Mexico, and then I don't even know if they're in the right order. And don't correct me, because that's tedious. But I see on your face, you're like, but you're doing it wrong. Where do we go? Where was the first place we went overseas?
Outside of the United States?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the first place that we went outside of the United States together was the Bahamas.
And I think it was Mexico.
It was definitely not Mexico, because our first cruise was the Bahamas, and the first time we went to Mexico was a cruise.
Okay. So, sure, Bahamas, Mexico, Canada, in some order.
In some order, right.
Because I know we were staying close to home because I was still a smoker.
Yes.
And I couldn't take long flights.
Right.
It's really hard for me to take a long flight.
We were like, I can't go over an ocean for too long because I need a cigarette.
Yes. Not smoking opened up my life more than anything,
yeah.
I think. Because I came over to Japan to learn Japanese after I quit smoking.
But I definitely think that if you can come to a country as a tourist before deciding to move there.
Yes.
Then you are in materially different circumstances than having to move someplace sight unseen. If you have a job when you arrive, you're in materially different circumstances than coming somewhere with no job.
So you can't do that in Japan.
You can't do that in Japan unless you come as a refugee.
Yes. So,
or unless you come as a Brazilian descendant of Japanese grandparents, then you don't have to have a job to come over.
But you do have to have, so for more clarity, coming as a refugee, you stay in our refugee center. Coming as a Japanese descendant, that gives you a special status. You don't have any support and you have no place to stay.
Right.
And then coming as a tourist, you have limited stay.
Yeah.
And then coming on a work visa, you have different restrictions. But Japan is so much better than the United States on this because your visa status is connected to what you're doing, not to who you're doing it with.
Yes.
So like if I come here on a student visa, as long as I'm a student, they'll renew that visa until the end of time. As long as I have, and here's the kicker, you have to have 10,000 United States dollars or 1,000,000 yen. So like 9,000 something or 1,000,000 yen in the bank to get your first student visa.
Right.
So you're, and I think, and a weird thing about Japan, I think this is so weird. You cannot get a scholarship from a Japanese school or from the Japanese government until you are enrolled in school. But you can't get a student visa unless you have 10,000 or 9,000, I'll just say yen, 1,000,000 yen in the bank. And I think, like, if you have 1,000,000 yen in the bank, do you need a scholarship?
That's actually, there's different things on this, because I worked with a lot of scholarship students when I was at Meidai, because I was a TA.
Yeah.
So for certain types of government scholarships, if you're sponsored by your government, you don't have to have that money.
Yeah.
Because your government has undertaken to repatriate you if you need it.
Yeah.
And there are Japanese government scholarships intended only for foreign students.
But you still have to be accepted at the university before you can get it.
No, the type that I'm thinking about getting one of those scholarships is not accepted at the university, although the only certain universities can take them. R1 research universities can take them. If you get one of those scholarships, basically any school will accept you because they come with perks for the school as well. So it is possible to get a scholarship that's not attached to a school from the Japanese government. And then,
but it's really hard.
It is really hard, yeah. Yeah. And so, I applied for one of those after I graduated and didn't get it. And no shame, they're really, really hard.
Yeah.
But
so for me, I think we kind of digressed a little bit there, talking about the differences and points of view, with one of them being language learning. I don't find that there are... I think there are pseudo gatekeepers in Nagoya that make it seem like the community is super small.
Right.
And super insulated. What I find is interesting is that how many of my clients assume I have seen someone that I've never even heard the name of.
Mm.
And I don't confirm or deny that anyone's my client. So, you know, maybe I heard their name, maybe I haven't. But I can say honestly that people will say, I know so-and-so is your client, and I'll think, I don't even know who that person is. Like,
right.
Who are they even talking about? Because there are a lot of foreigners in Nagoya. But they create these little cliques and bubbles. And what I find is that I don't go into any of these cliques and bubbles. Like the American Chamber of Commerce Japan wants to be a gatekeeper
right. In
one area. But I feel like that's sort of collapsing in on itself as the restaurants fail. And then there's the different big English teaching companies. Mm-hmm. Like there's the ECC bubble. And then there's... the Freebell bubble, which is an apartment complex community
right.
that becomes very insular. And then there's like the Nova bubble. There's the Berlitz bubble. And all of these different bubbles think that they're it.
Right.
And when I did English teaching, I worked for tons and tons of companies because I treated English teaching like waiting tables. Because there were so many English teaching companies at the time that I was doing it. And I was like, okay, if I don't like this company, I'll just quit and go work at a different one.
Yeah.
And our family needed the money. They needed me to be employed. But that's just the way my mind works. And so I worked with a lot of different companies. And I went to this one company and there was 15 different English companies sending people in, like big name English companies. So I'm like, okay.
I remember that. I went with you. We went to Toba.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. So this is an optical illusion.
Right.
That there's any scarcity of English teaching jobs at that time. So for me, I feel like I'm privileged from my point of view. And I've never valued a job more than I valued myself. Mm. And my work has never been my identity. And I think that's from my checkered, colored, exotic, however you want to put it, past. But no matter whatever work I was doing, that wasn't who I am.
Right.
And I've always had to create that distance. So I feel like my underprivilege, because of the way my mind works, kind of morphed into a type of privilege, and that I'm always one step removed from everything that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying.
Okay. So coming over to Japan and being an immigrant, what changed my mind? I've always felt privileged to be American. I've always been super proud of that winning lottery ticket, because I think being American is a winning lottery ticket. The thing that changed my mind were my views and my understanding of American immigration law, which I think is oppressive and cruel and arrogant and separatist and just wrong. I just think it's wrong. I just do. And for me, I just seeing it being in another country that's not overwhelmed, mm-hmm. and has a more, from my perspective, more sensical approach to immigration. Like saying there are boundaries. We can't just let everybody in. There's not, like, I don't know on that, like, what would happen if there were no borders? I don't know. So I don't have an opinion on that because I haven't researched it enough to form an opinion, and I want it to be educated. But I feel like being an immigrant, I've educated myself enough to say that I think the immigration policy of Japan is better than the immigration policy of the United States.
I think it's more coherent. And I think the immigration policy of Japan is consistently, what can you do for Japan? Is this good for Japan?
Yes.
And I think the U.S. immigration policy is incoherent and arbitrary, and that there are pockets of it that are similar to the Japanese one, but there are also pockets of it that are very pro-company. They're like, can you benefit the specific company that's sponsoring you? Like tying your visa to a company on the H-1Bs and stuff is very much, can you benefit a company? Forget what that company does in terms of the American economy, whether you're good personally for the economy. It's, can you benefit this company? I feel like the difference is, if Japanese immigration law is applied consistently and, let's say, 100% enforcement, then society looks basically like it is. But if you were able to apply American immigration policy 100%, it would radically reshape the United States. There is not, here in Japan, a market for undocumented immigrants.
No, there's not.
And the closest that it gets, and they've started cracking down on it because they're like, whoa, 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 this is not what we intended, are the language learning companies.
Yeah.
That are set up really as places to provide cheap labor, but not actually teach language. And the government is actively trying to shut those down.
Well, and too, there's also been a wave, which we talked about before, where they're doing domestic workers and factory workers.
Right.
Visas for that. So to me, I think if you want to come to Japan, if you're curious about how to come to Japan, I think Google it. For your country specifically, that the Ministry of Education and Technology will have tons of, and JETROS, the Japanese, what is JETROS stand for? G-E-T-R-O.
J-E-T-R-O is Japanese External Trade Relations Organization.
Yeah, they're a really solid information source. But my basic thing, when people email me, they're like, how did you do it? I tell them, ooh, you don't want my answer. My answer is 10 grand.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's like the high end of things. But we moved a family of three.
Yes.
And we sold off all of our possessions and sold a house. Mm-hmm. And that's how we were able to do it. So again, that privilege comes into play. So if you're at home and miserable and wanting to figure out how to get the hell out of there and how to come to Japan, save $3,000. Mm-hmm. Like, go work a crappy job, live at home, don't have a life, don't do anything, and keep your eye on the prize. Because here's the thing, Japan does not pay to patriate people to Japan. They don't to expatriate people to Japan.
They you're saying that Japanese companies don't pay moving expenses.
No, they don't at yeah. all. Like Toyota does, but you have to get a job at Toyota and then work your way up.
I think the internal transfer is a completely different thing. And anybody who's in that situation probably already knows about it. If you're so working for
like
a big
Toyota, there's like Mitsubishi, Boeing. They pay, at least in our area. And Chad's making a face at me because I'm fanning myself. And I don't care because we turn off our air conditioners to not have that buzzing noise. And I feel like I'm freaking melting. So, it's June in Japan. And we don't have our air conditioner on.
That's a lot.
So it is a lot. So I'm hot. I'm going to fan myself.
If you're
either give me air conditioning or allow me to fan myself, oppressive man.
If you're working for a big multinational and they have positions open overseas, I think you'll probably know that. Look into those, go those. That's absolutely your best route.
I have to turn a fan on.
Well, turn a fan on.
It's too much.
Okay.
I'm roasting. I turn it on really low just to have like some air moving around my body.
I understand.
As I melt, I'm dying. It's horrible. It's hot. It's awful here. I'm so hot.
It's hotter in California right now.
No, it's not. It's a dry heat.
Somewhere.
I used to make fun of people when they were like, it's a dry heat when I was in California. I was like, what does it matter? Oh, it matters. Trust. Trust, it matters. It's so humid. Like, I can feel the air, like, laying on my body, pressing down heat into my soul.
Well, that's no good.
So I'm having to drink water and have a low fan.
Okay.
Sorry for the noise, but you don't want your girl to die.
No, nobody wants that.
Thank you. Because the heat is just oppressive. So something else I've learned from becoming an immigrant was, one, a clear focus on my privilege, and two, a clear focus on how America is viewed by the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. And so in the United States, I was taught that America was the most powerful country in the world. And in Japan, I'm discovering that it's not. And so something that's really surprising, I think I've mentioned it before, when Obama came into office, my life did not change at all. And when Trump came into office, my life did not change at all. So I had a boost. Whenever there's an election, I get an uptick in American clients who just want to talk to another American. Mm-hmm. And I'm there for everybody on both sides of the aisle because I'm a bipartisan therapist.
There you go, enforcing the political binary.
Yes, I'm politically non-binary, and I'm not making fun of anybody who's gender non-binary. I do believe that there are people who believe that the binary political system is unjust and corrupt, and I am one of those people.
Yeah, I agree with you. I understand that the American politics, you have to create a binary at the national level.
Yeah.
There is no other way just because of how the...
Because everybody acts like an independent or a Green Party would get elected president every year. Everyone's like hopeful. And I'm like, no. They can't get money.
It is possible for a third party to get elected. But the moment they get elected, you cease to have a three-party system again. It's just that one of the other two parties dies.
Yes.
And we can look at history to see that. And the reason is related to the electoral rules. There's just... mathematically, you have to end up with two parties because otherwise nothing happens, basically. It's so a parliamentary system like Japan has, you can have multiple parties. Japan, you don't have multiple parties, really. You've got one large party that, with a three-year exception, has been in power since World War II.
Yeah.
And you've got a bunch of smaller parties who can shift around and you know, ally with the main party for different ideological things. But
so I like Japan more than I like the United States.
Wow, bold words.
Yeah, I do. And I understand that those might be viewed as treasonous by some.
I think the type of people who view those words as treasonous are not the type of people who...
Listen to our podcast.
Yes.
Because they would have cleared out long before this episode. They're like, there's so many more offensive things I've said.
Yes.
That is not even the most offensive thing I've said. I think it's way more offensive to those people that I'm an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And a shameless former sex worker and, like, part of the LGBTQIA plus community. I'm part of the plus. So, yes, the plus is important.
You're that woman their parents warned them about.
I am. That reminds me of that, like, Lucille Ball episode of I Love Lucy when she was trying to scare off Ricardo's cousin by becoming that brazen woman that they had always warned him about, and that just made him want to stay more.
Uh-huh.
Loose women make the world go round. And that's just, like, so part of the patriarchy.
But, yes.
Yeah. So, anyways. Anywho, back to what you're saying. So I do like Japan better than I like the United States.
I like our life in Japan better than I liked our life in the United States.
I think the patriarchy is alive and well in Japan.
Very much so.
But I think that there's far less rape culture in Japan. And so looking at countries that don't have the patriarchy alive and well, I don't think there's a single country on earth that the, even that country that it, all women. There's a village in Africa that's all women. I think they're still oppressed because they're limited by the bubble of their insular inside the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I feel like, okay, let's pick a country that rape is really low.
Yeah.
So and violent crimes against women. I think there's a lot of domestic violence in Japan.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of spousal stuff that goes on in Japan. But I married someone safe, and that's another privilege that I have. Like, I have a safe husband.
Wow, I'm somebody's privilege?
That's nice. Yeah, you're my privilege, not somebody's. Let's be clear. You're my privilege, bud.
Oh, I know whose.
Okay. No, there's not enough for you to go around anywhere.
Please don't give me any demerits.
Yeah, you are my privilege. So, which country do you like better?
I like life here in Japan better than I like life in the United States.
Ooh, hedging those bets.
I'm not saying that one country is better than the other, because I acknowledge that Japan has...
Problems?
Problems. Has a very totalitarian leaning.
Yeah.
Despite the parliament and everything, that there is a lot of...
fascist roots.
Fascist roots. The State Secrets Act that passed a few years ago is worrisome, which is why you almost never hear any real news about the government other than from government websites.
Yeah.
Is because journalists,
don't bother.
Journalists can be jailed for revealing government secrets, even if those secrets are supposed to be public knowledge.
There is no third estate.
Fourth.
Sorry.
Yeah. I don't know what the other three are, so don't. Don't look at me like, what are the other three? I just know the press is the fourth estate.
Well, neither one of us are journalists.
No.
So, there's that.
Yeah.
Or so, maybe. No, it's for, as an American, I feel protected a lot from a lot of Japanese shenanigans.
Yeah.
I feel like they just don't bother with me because I'm not worth it. And I find them thinking of me as not... being worth the effort to be really nice. And the fact that our son won't be shot for walking down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't, although he has been pulled over for driving while black in Japan, he wasn't at risk of being shot when that happened. And they did sit in his driver's seat, which was like, he was so irate about it when it happened. He was like, they sat in my driver's seat. And I was just like, this would be such a different conversation in the United States. He was mad that they had gotten in his driver's seat. Like, that was the most offensive thing the police officer had done to him, was they sat in his seat as if they were the owner of that vehicle. And for me, as a woman of color with a black son, having that be something that's funny and comical.
Right.
I'll prefer Japan over the United States.
Yes.
Because that wouldn't have been a funny story. That would have been a terrifying story.
Yes.
Like, you got pulled over by the police, what? Mm-hmm. And so, and his afro is big, and he doesn't do anything with it. So, they were like, dude, you look like a vagabond. So, but go on, you're saying that, that Japan has its problems because you can't get real reports on the government.
Yeah.
Which is so different than Trump going on and telling people just lies.
It is different because...
And banning people from the White House for reporting negatively on him.
Well, I think it is different because
there's... Patriot Act.
There's no Freedom of Information Act here.
Okay.
So you can't ever find out what the government is doing unless they feel like telling you.
So in the United States, those redacted documents that you have limited access to is what you're clinging to?
I'm saying in the United States, they have to actively work against you discovering that information. And okay. Here, all they have to do is say, nope. And so here you...
So I feel like here it's more honest.
Yeah, here you can't sue the government to get access. No. There's no pretense that you will ever know what they're doing.
It's none of your damn business. Get elected.
Right.
Run for office. Or get the mayor of your city drunk.
Okay. And he will spill everything.
Yes, he will, honey. Yes, he will. On that happy note, thank you for listening. And I hope that my oral disfigurement wasn't too jarring, or my fanning of myself, the things I'm doing. So it seems like the F's are the hardest.
Yes, the fricatives and the sibilants.
Yes. On that happy note, talk to you next week. Bye. Or head on over to, yes, I got to plug the Patreon.
Yes, please do head over to Patreon, because like the plosives are no problem. Those yes. P sounds.
And I didn't hardly laugh.
Patreon. Yeah, I'm sorry for not being funny today.
Yeah, you just weren't. Sorry.
Maybe I'll be funnier on take two. So cheer chat up
by heading over to Patreon and becoming a patron and checking out our take two. Maybe he'll be funny there.
Okay, for real, bye though.
Yeah. It is. We can only hope that Chad will return back to his humorous, jolly self.
It's too hot for funny.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can keep the conversation going on our website at themusicsinjapan.com. That's the music spelled M-U-S-I-C-K-S. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at The Musics on both.
And if you'd like to support us, please visit our website to sign up for our newsletter, join a Patreon tier, or send us a one-time donation through PayPal or Ko-fi. We hope you'll listen again next week.
Bye.